Hi, my name is Ed Renane, and I'm a safeguarding adults manager with the NHS Clinical Commissioning Groups in Derby and Derbyshire. And in this podcast, we're going to be looking at financial abuse and its place in the health workplace. We're very fortunate to have Steve Allen from Derbyshire County Council's Trading Standards to help explain the different aspects of financial abuse. So without further ado, I'll introduce Steve. Thanks for coming.
Hi, Ed. Thanks for having me.
And let's start with a very simple question. What is financial abuse?
Well, in broadest terms, it's defined as having money or any other property stolen, being defrauded, being put under pressure in relation to money or other property, and having money or other property misused.
Okay, thanks very much. It's part of the Care Act has made financial abuse, you know, has endorsed the fact that it's now part of safeguarding adults. Why is it seen as safeguarding adults?
Well, the Care Act recognised the risk posed to both individuals and society from financial abuse, and it expanded by making it clear that scamming was seen as a specific form of abuse, and the guidance it expanded on that for the first time. And it also imposes duties on public authorities to protect citizens from that type of abuse and neglect. Both Derby and Derbyshire have a local safeguarding adult board as a statutory body, and both of them follow the same agreed policies and procedures, which now include sort of looking to safeguarding and prevention of financial abuse. In general terms, the Act recognises that scamming is a growing problem, and I guess if we fail to respond appropriately to the threat by safeguarding those, then it's likely that the sort of financial and perhaps as importantly the social and health impacts of that will only grow.
Thanks very much. From a health point of view, me working in the NHS, how is financial abuse relevant to me and my work with patients, carers and their families?
Well, there are a number of different consequences that sort of work their way through with people who are sort of victimised, and it can have a direct and indirect impact on people's physical and mental health. The effects can include, you know, detrimental sort of mental, physical and emotional health issues. It can lead to depression, distress, a kind of loss of enjoyment of daily activities. We're aware that it can, in extreme cases, lead to people sort of considering or trying to take their own life. It builds up large debts. That does, unsurprisingly, have come with those detrimental effects. One of the things we find is that it can damage relationships. We find that people who are victims to these things can reject their sort of care, sort of networks, their families and friends. They don't want the help. We know that people can be victimised repeatedly, they can become sort of repeat victims. And recent studies have shown that adults who are defrauded in their own home are 2.5 times more likely to potentially go into a hospital or residential care than those of the same group who aren't defrauded.
Really? That's interesting.
We're also aware that demands and costs for health and social care are likely to increase with regards to this, because as the population ages, that demographic that's likely to be targeted is expanding sort of increasingly over time. So it's a big problem, and you know, we're increasingly seeing the kind of health issues that are related to it. There are kind of other more indirect sort of factors that are at play. You can see shame, embarrassment and guilt. We quite often see that with victims. They don't want to admit to it. Yeah. They feel that they almost feel a bit stupid by it or a bit ashamed by it.
I understand that.
We also see that where people have been victims for some time, they can feel that they've got quite strong emotional and personal ties to the people. Even though they've never met them, it's been conducted by mail. Mm. It becomes something that they really sort of hang on to.
I think was of their friends.
Well, exactly. Some of the scams that I'll come on to mention, the things like the clairvoyant scams in particular that perpetrated by mail, they're quite nasty, and they can really get their hooks into someone.
Right.
So, you know, we know that there are any number of different sort of factors that are at play in these sorts of things, and we're obviously looking for all care staff and all frontline staff out there to maybe sort of sow the seeds of spotting when people are feeling like this.
Okay, that's great. Thanks very much. What changed for health in relation to financial abuse and safeguarding in 2015? You mentioned the Care Act, but was there anything else that's changed?
There has been an increasing focus on this sort of thing for some time, but we, as professionals, we now think that the Care Act has helped that by kind of formalising in guidance and in the legislation the fact that scamming, defrauding, things like that are covered. The Care Act did endorse the local safeguarding adult boards as a statutory body, and included as part of that the need for agreed policies and procedures which would cover abuse, including financial abuse. It recognises that there's a risk and an increasing risk to society from these things, and it imposes a duty on public authorities to start making inquiries where they become aware that someone is has the potential of being subject to that sort of abuse.
Okay.
In terms of scamming being a growing problem, and the threat that's posed by safeguarding, the idea is that we try and build in safeguarding and prevention at the earliest stage possible.
Okay. Thanks very much for that. You've mentioned a couple of times now scamming. And obviously, what is meant by the term financial scam?
Well, scams, fraud, financial abuse, which we're trying to move away a little bit from the term scam in practice, because that tends to underplay to a certain extent the fact that these are really serious sort of activities that are perpetrated. But in their sort of narrowest terms, scams are designed to extort money from people by using sort of misleading or deceptive selling techniques. They're often disguised as sort of legitimate business practices relying on the premises of sort of false promises. It could be a product, an investment, a relationship that doesn't exist, or that the value of what's, you know, offered is much less than advertised. And in general terms, they fall into four categories.
Okay.
You'll get postal scams, telephone scams, scams perpetrated online, or kind of doorstep crime or doorstep scams, the traditional type that's perpetrated by door knocking.
And can you give us some examples of those kind of four scams that you
mentioned? Yeah, there's many that we come across. In terms of the postal scams, you know, some of the most common that we come across are things like lotteries or prize draws. It'll be either directly a claim that someone has won an awful lot of money through a lottery or prize draw that clearly that person has never entered or that doesn't exist in the first place. They can quite often be accompanied by means of a kind of catalogue scam where there is a requirement to place an order for an item beforehand in order to be entered into a draw.
Okay.
We quite often find that these will be for things like vitamins or mineral supplements, food supplements to be taken. It could be cosmetic products or creams, but it can be other stuff. It can be boxes of biscuits, it can be chocolates.
And
the underlying issue is that they're worth pence, but the person has paid £25 or £30 to enter the draw.
Right.
And they are losing huge amounts of money by week, by month, by year to do it.
Okay.
I mentioned clairvoyant scams. These are particularly insidious. It's payment for the key to a happy life. The language used in the letters by mail that people receive are very manipulative. They will look to extract personal information from people. They will look for vulnerable people to sort of latch on to the fictitious character. And we find that those are some of the most upsetting when we actually see the effect.
I can imagine,
People are kind of rejecting their own family in place of some unknown, unnamed person who's promising the earth, but clearly, you know, is providing nothing and no support.
Okay.
And then you'll get others, the more opportunistic ones, like overseas scams that are perpetrated to try and get someone into the idea of releasing an inheritance, and there'll be an upfront advance fee to pay, and clearly there is no inheritance in the name of the person that they're speaking to. So postal scams is one where we get the most limited number of reports, because people generally, we find that the average age is about 76. People often live alone.
Right.
They often don't want to report it, so we hear the least about those.
Right.
In terms of things like online scams, you'll find things like, in terms of phishing, which is where people can get emails from a bank or a building society trying to trick people into revealing sort of financial or personal details. Use of fake websites, where once again you'll go on, you'll pay money, but it might be a false service. It's not linked to the official service.
Right. Okay.
We see a lot of those. Like we'll see, you know, driving license, official documents, all sorts of things, and you'll think it's a real website. It could be a banking website. You log on, and you'll. It may well be that you find out some point later that you've been scammed and they've taken your information. Romance scams is a particularly big one.
Right.
It doesn't happen, you know, we know that it's increasing, but where someone does become subject to a romance scam, they may never meet the person that they're corresponding to online, but we know that the stories and the emotional sort of draw on people means that over time, people can lose tens and hundreds of thousands of pounds.
Really?
Through the stories that are perpetrated by the scammer, you know, to, you know, I need some money to get over from a country in Africa or the Middle East, you know, that stories about being a migrant or a refugee and needing to release some money, all sorts of really sad stories, and it can take over people's lives. So there are occasionally stories of these sorts of things in the papers and in the media, but they can really take an awful lot of money off someone. So in terms of those sorts of scams, that's online online stuff.
Okay, thanks.
In terms of just to sort of, in terms of the phone stuff, you'll similarly get those sorts of requests for information and so right. forth. People will be aware of PPI for pension scams. People will get sucked into things like investment or boiler room scams as well, where people can lose huge amounts of money. You'll have people persuading them that, you know, they can make investments, etc. So there are any number of different types of scams out there, and people can people can find out more just by searching the internet on those sorts of things.
Okay, so is there a stereotypical profile of a patient being financially abused that's something as a health worker we should be looking for?
Well, yes, we've found more broadly, for instance, on the male scams, from records we've had across about 500 or 600 people that we've become aware of. When we know that they're victims, I think we've worked out the average age is about 76. Predominantly, they live alone. Quite often, there's been a recent bereavement. So, in terms of a typical victim, that's one side of it. That doesn't mean that there isn't a whole spread of people across society who are scammed, but predominantly, those are the people that perhaps we're really interested in, in those that are most vulnerable. I mean, in terms of, for instance, doorstep crime, for instance, the kind of door knocks and whatever, we know that those sorts of criminals will once again target people who live alone. They'll look for like grab rails, any sort of signs that someone is of a certain age and perhaps is more trusting and won't tell them to go away.
They might even look for health visitors or carers going in on a regular basis.
We have had instances
so they can where tell that a person might be on their own.
Exactly. Yeah. We have had instances where there's been a suggestion that either people have been followed or recognised, leaving hospitals. We get certain types of doorstep crime that will come with a telephone call first, pretending to be a legitimate company selling mobility aids or anything like that. And people think that they know their details in advance.
Right.
We just think they're quite clever and they will engage potentially an older or vulnerable person into disclosing their own details about, I've just come out of hospital, I was waiting for a call from the NHS to provide me with my wheelchair or my mobility aid or whatever. So we're not sure, but we know that people will latch onto that sort of thing.
Okay, thanks.
I mean, there is sort of one case study that we kind of used that has come up recently, which was a male scam victim. He was 70 years old. We found out about him from a large list of information that was provided to us by the National Trading Standards Scams team. And our officers went out to see him on two or three occasions, and we just found ourselves not being able to persuade the guy, whilst quite clearly he was a victim, 70 years old, living alone, various health issues. But we didn't seem to be able to get anywhere. We just found that we were coming up to a barrier. He wouldn't accept the advice.
Right.
We established a kind of contact with his care worker, did a joint visit, and on a second occasion, we managed to play him some footage of some TV footage of a similar victim who had realised the issue and was prepared to go on. And it was only at that point, when he saw the same letter held by a guy in his 70s in the same position, that he broke down and he realised that he...
Sad.
It is, and we've since managed to remove over 1,000 scan mail items and 500 pots of supplements and various other things from his home. And we think over 2 or 3 years he's probably spent at least £20,000.
Wow.
And it's money that he can ill afford.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, what makes someone more at risk of being financially abused? Is there something, as a district nurse or a carer or somebody visiting as a GP, is there something I could look for that would give me some signs maybe of that risk?
Well, I would suggest that in the first instance it could be, you know, loneliness can be a driver. We know that people will rush to answer the phone because they've got no contact. So loneliness is something. People will look forward to the mail, whatever it is. That can include the scam mail, you know, and they will look forward to answering that. It is people who are potentially older, living alone. We know that recent bereavement can be a trigger, we think. Particularly with things like clairvoyant scams or people wanting to win some money to give them a boost, something like that, that we think bereavement can be a trigger to starting to respond to things. We strongly suspect that, you know, early onset dementia, the stage at which someone might receive a phone call or the mail, but they might sort of in a couple of weeks' time forget, or the next day they might forget that they've responded, so they'll start to respond again and again. So those sorts of things, early onset dementia, and then dementia can those sorts of things can go in place. And then beyond that, it's things like the sort of shame of wanting to admit it, the fact that someone wants to believe something that they're prepared to put to one side the 95% of them that thinks this ain't right.
Right.
And it's the sort of hopeful 5% that basically keeps them responding.
Okay. So are there different reasons why people respond to scams in the first place?
It could be, as I say, it could be sort of any sort of physical or mental health issue that could be a trigger point. Dementias, some form of sort of cognitive decline, the social isolation, loneliness. People will put pressure on people to respond. They'll look to isolate people from their care networks, their family and friends, their carers, by saying, this is just between you and me, don't get anyone else involved. If they fail to send the letter off, they'll start to get phone calls pressurising them. Older people often feel that they want to trust people and they're less prepared to reject the advances of people, you know, particularly on the telephone. We know that, you know, maybe society in more modern day, you know, younger people are prepared just to say, no, I'm not interested, just leave me alone, go away. We suspect that either through being brought up slightly differently to that, people are prepared to trust, they will engage people, and quite often it's that engagement that starts the process going.
Okay. I mean, what can staff working in the NHS do to prevent this? Have you got any sort of advice or thoughts?
Well, we'd encourage all frontline staff out there, whether they be within the county council or more broadly within the sort of NHS sort of arena, anyone who's routinely visiting or talking to some of the most vulnerable in Derby and Derbyshire, and having just a very brief awareness of these sort of possibilities of abuse, frauds and scams, to act as an eyes and ears, really, to sort of keep an eye on it, think about the sort of signs that they might spot and the type of effect that it might be having. You know, it might well be that people have got so little money because of the issue in the first place.
Yeah.
For instance, there's a neglect issue there. It might be that they're hoarding the mail. You might see loads of this mail and all the other stuff. Why is that? And there is some online training that's available through the National Trading Standards Scams team.
So things like heating not being on when it's cold, not eating properly.
Exactly.
Perhaps not washing or, you know, things falling down that normally they wouldn't be like that for that person. Those are the kind of things you might look for.
Yeah, some form of unexpected decline, really.
Because people can't afford to put the heating on or to feed themselves.
It could be that as well.
Okay.
We do come across that. We have instances where it can appear that people are kind of neglecting themselves, and that can be either through the direct financial consequences of having no money, or it can be also with regards to the fact that the kind of psychological effect on people means that they feel less able or willing to look after themselves quite as well. It's not always a financial driver, but it's looking for those sorts of things. A really good resource that's out there that we're looking for, or encouraging all sort of frontline and sort of frontline managers and whatever within NHS and all agencies who deal with sort of vulnerable people, is a Friends Against Scams training package.
Okay.
It's a 45-minute package. We think it's one of the best kind of resources as a summary of what to look for. It can be accessed at the friendsagainstscams.org.uk, and we're currently in discussions across Derbyshire to try and engage sort of partner agencies to embed the training within their own organisations.
So okay, that sounds good. Maybe we should get everybody on that. Definitely. So
we'd be very keen if that, okay, that happened.
As a GP or a nurse visiting somebody, what should I do if I'm worried that they've been susceptible or to financial scam abuse?
Well, we'd say in the first instance, it's maybe not to. We've found that experience shows us that trying to pin someone down and sort of question them too much often doesn't work.
Okay.
It's quite often a case of getting them to open up a bit and talk about something, or rather than necessarily asking sort of very direct questions,
right,
it's in some respects allowing them to explain.
It's about listening,
themselves.
Really.
It is. It doesn't, you know, it very much depends on the individual. It's about looking at the signs around them, and then taking their cues from that as to whether,
okay,
they start to ask the questions. You know, we've talked about some of the things that can give rise to concerns. It might be that they've got loads and loads of empty checkbooks knocking around. It might be that there is loads and loads of mail. They might notice that someone gets some very odd phone calls whilst they're in the house.
Right, okay.
Lots of different cues to look for, but to allow people to open up a little bit themselves.
Right.
To be honest, so.
Okay. And if they need to report something, then they can contact yourselves or maybe Citizens Advice Helpline?
Yeah, I mean, there's both instances. I think if someone has any sort of serious sort of concerns that people might be victims, we're more than happy for people to email us through to trading.standards@derbyshire.gov.uk or similarly @derby.gov.uk. Or if they've just got some more general issues or want to report something, they can get through to the National Citizens Advice Consumer Helpline. That's 03454 040506.
Okay.
But basically, just get in touch, yeah, and ask the question. We're more than happy to respond.
And obviously, if it's more immediate and serious harm that is being done to the victim, they need to make a safeguarding referral.
Yeah, if there are more broad concerns about the health and well-being of someone, and it seems to be a serious or a need to make a kind of an immediate assessment of someone's circumstances, then yes, that would be a discussion.
So they would speak to their manager and then go through the normal organisation's safeguarding referral,
exactly,
process.
We would hope that if there, yeah, was a financial or a financial abuse element to that Trading Standards can be involved at some point.
Okay. How can I, as a professional working in the NHS, find out more?
There is a huge amount. We are aware that there's a huge amount of information out there from different agencies. We are looking to put in place within Derbyshire, County Council's Safer Derbyshire website is going to host very soon a list of a load of different resources,
right,
that are available that people can,
okay,
kind of have access to.
And we can
to.
Have a link to that on the CCG website as well.
Exactly.
And other health websites.
Yeah,
so
we're more than happy to provide that. But there are also things like, you know, Age UK is very good, the Friends Against Scams website. There's a Derbyshire Scam Watch website. There's a lot of stuff out there, but we'll put that together for staff to get a hold of.
That's great. Thanks, Steve, for giving us this important information on financial abuse, and in particular the implications for those adults at risk in our community who we see every day in our surgeries, clinics and hospitals. It's really important that we do give them the help they need. And obviously, as you say, part of that is about being sensitive to their needs, about listening, making sure that we actually do what they want, which making safeguarding personal is all about that. So that hopefully that's going to be something that we'll encourage in the future. Thanks for coming in and doing the podcast with us.
No problem, Ed. Thanks very much.